Senator, you are co-chairing a group that just finished up a news conference in Albany that is speaking of the ongoing epidemic of heroin, and you've just introduced a multifaceted strategy to really take on what's been a severe epidemic across the state and the nation.
Absolutely. And today was a good day in the war against the heroin epidemic. That's really what this is. If you talk to families and providers and law enforcement on the front lines, they have been overwhelmed. Today was about providing them tools, resources, primarily through statutory changes, legislation that focuses on four areas: prevention, treatment, recovery, and enforcement. We have to do them all. And so there's a number of bills in each area, whether it's providing additional education, a bill that would require education. If you're being prescribed opioids or opiates, you have to be educated by the prescriber as to what exactly those are and how addictive those can be. If you're a counselor or someone doing the prescribing, a doctor, a pharmacist, understanding, going through education, understand what those medications are and what the right dose might be. It might not be a 30-day prescription. It might be a 7-day prescription. There's so many stories of people going with their wisdom teeth out and they get a 30-day prescription of OxyContin. I just don't see that being a positive thing, and I certainly have seen a number of cases where they overprescribing or the lack of education and knowledge about how addictive these medications can be has led to being addicted and then obviously the move towards heroin. Recovery, access to recovery, access to treatment. One of the largest things that have come out of the hearings, and I've gone to 6 hearings across the state, is longer coverage, whether it's through insurance companies, longer coverage of treatment, longer treatment models, because simply 28 days or 30 days is not enough. It is not enough, and we need to increase that. Doesn't always have to be in facilities. It can be wraparound services or outpatient services and supports. But longer coverages for treatment is definitely something that needs to be done. That is a recommendation. And then there's enforcement areas too, giving our law enforcement tools to fight this epidemic. But, today is not about a news conference, and it's not about a report. It's about action. It's about doing something. We're going to pass this package of bills in the Senate over the next several days. We're calling on the Assembly to do the same. And the governor now has a task force. We have an appointee to that task force, one of my co-chairs, Senator Murphy, and he's going to be carrying these recommendations to that task force. We want to see action. This has to be about action. We're not going to solve this epidemic through press conferences and reports and headlines. It's got to be through action, and today was a step in that direction.
You hit on a very interesting point about doctors over-prescribing. There's kind of this sense of we live in a culture where we want pain relief. We want it instant. We want it entirely pain-free. And actually, I did speak to a local health official saying that's the pressure doctors are under, that their own credibility is put into question if they're not giving you full pain relief. So is it time perhaps that as part of education that we revisit the culture of complete pain-free relief, saying, maybe you do have to put up with a little bit of aches and pains if it prevents the alternative, which is maybe becoming too reliant on the painkillers?
No doubt about it. I mean, I think there's two aspects to this. One is doctors are good guys. Primarily, most of the doctors are good people. Drug dealers are bad guys. There's always going to be a drug dealer. You can put all the drug dealers in jail. There will always be somebody else who wants to pop up and take their place or what have you. So there will always be those parasites. But doctors are good. They want to help people. So that's why I feel that we can partner with doctors by helping educate them, but also educating the public, educating people who might receive these pain pills. And so they understand, that just because the doctor gave you a 30-day doesn't mean you have to take 30 days. And understand how addictive they may be and that maybe a little bit of pain dealing with it is not the worst thing. That can be a better use of than the alternative. I do think that's a huge part of this. We need to, certainly I think as a culture, one of the things you hear about in from treatments and treatment facilities and recovery coaches and that is owning if you're an addict, you have to own the problem. I think as a community, as a nation, we have to own that maybe in some cases, not all, but in some cases, we're too over-reliant on that, what you said, that immediate make the pain go away, no matter what it is, no matter what I'm putting in my body. And certainly we have to know more about this. And I think the more people know, they can make better decisions and better educated decisions about their health. And hopefully we can start to see those deaths and those numbers go the other direction.
Speaking of making decisions, you do get an element in the public that say, well, you know, they're the ones that chose to stick that needle in there. Why should I feel sorry for them? Tell me about kind of that public perception again. Is that just more of that perception that the so-called stereotype of the heroin user just kind of resurfacing?
Well, I think that the stereotype of the heroin user is no longer doesn't fit any longer because it's not even using needles. The heroin is, you know, these young kids are snorting it, they're ingesting it, they can take it different ways. And it's not just the heroin, of course, it is the opioids and the pain medications. You know, it's the same addiction. So the person who's living day-to-day, you know, on Oxycontin or hydrocodone, that's the same person who ultimately goes and needs to use heroin. It's the same addiction. It may look different. It may be, one might be more socially acceptable, but it's the same problem. And, you know, on the heroin side, you know, a lot of times these are kids from good families, kids from families that do not have a history of drug addiction or drug use. But if their addiction, and if you look at addiction as a disease, you know, I think when you see the number of deaths, and when I've seen it across swaths of our community, we can't afford to just say, well, it's not my problem, because it is becoming our problem. And it's costing millions and tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars probably, to treat these individuals, or whether they get arrested. Those are law enforcement resources. Every time they're arresting a heroin addict, they're not helping, you know, somebody who's trapped in their home or somebody who's having a heart attack, whatever it might be. So we're spending valuable resources and public dollars on the epidemic now. I think we can do it smarter and more fiscally conservative way, and in a way that actually helps people. And that's also a part of what this recommendation and a part of what today's about.
We're talking a multifaceted series of bills in four categories, all of which is kind of a comprehensive strategy to attack the heroin epidemic?
Absolutely. And this has all come out. I mean, I've been on the task force for 15 months, and this really is the culmination of 15 months of talking to providers, talking to families who've lost children, also talking to people who have survived, talking to people who are in recovery. I think that's very important. You know, we focus a lot, obviously, on the loss of life, on the folks who don't make it, on the tragedies. But there's a lot of success stories out there, which you don't hear as much about. But I think that's very important, A, that it can happen, that people can beat this and be, you know, be in long-term recovery, and to find out what worked for them, and let's replicate that model or that success across the state to the best we can. And so that's a big part of what we were doing too. But this has come out, these reforms have come from the bottom up. They've come from people on the front lines, doctors. They've come from families. They've come from providers. They've come from law enforcement officials. So this is not something that came out of Albany. It's come out of the people who are on the front lines, and we're doing our part to give those folks the resources and the tools they need to fight this.
What was the biggest impression that the families left upon you when you were hearing their firsthand stories?
Well, one of the impressions that I took away was that these were families who, you know, that I knew growing up. These were families in, you know, these weren't families that you would sort of identify as, you know, has a history of substance abuse, or these are families that were totally stunned and shocked by this epidemic and by what occurred to their loved ones. And I think it's very insidious the way it starts for a lot of these folks through addiction to painkillers or whatever. And I think that stigma sometimes gets in the way of people. You know, people don't want to believe that it's happening in their community. They don't want to believe that there's a 14-year-old in their school district who's using heroin. They don't want to believe that there's, you know, a mom of two who's addicted to painkillers. But that's the reality. That's the reality of what's going on. We know that. The facts bear that out. And so I think reducing that stigma, but just hearing these stories of folks who multiple, you know, been to hell and back with their loved one. And in some cases, they survived. In some cases, their loved one is still here. In a lot of cases, they're not. And, you know, their lives will never be the same. But they've used it. They've used a real tragedy to try and advocate for positive changes that can save lives in the future. But that was the one that I thought, a lot of these families, these are people that I could have been friends with or would have known in my community, you would never have thought there'd be an issue. And I think that's the one takeaway, is that whatever somebody's perception might be, that this is a junkie, this is somebody who's made just a poor choice, I think we need to rethink that a little bit. Not that they're not responsible for their decisions, and they need to take ownership. That is certainly a part of this, and I subscribe to that feeling. But at the end of the day, it's become a public health crisis when you have the number of deaths we've had, and we owe it to the public and their tax dollars to be good stewards and make sure we're spending the money where we should, in a more cost-effective way and in a way that gets folks treatment and gets folks into recovery.
And not to mention those taxpayers whose houses are getting broken into by people.
Absolutely.
It's kind of an ounce of prevention logic. You know, get them treated now, and perhaps that saves a would-be break-in later.
Absolutely, and the cops say the same thing, because they're seeing it every day. The number of, you know, people don't always make that connection. You see a robbery, you think that's somebody who's looking for money. But what are they looking for money for? To go and buy heroin, to go and buy pain medication, to go and buy drugs. And so that's why it's so important. And again, you have so many young kids that are using heroin that have no idea. They don't even know what fentanyl is. And fentanyl is 40 times more lethal than heroin, and that's where you're seeing the number of deaths. So until we get a handle on this and see those deaths go in the other direction, it's something we have to take very seriously. And when it comes up in the presidential election, you know this isn't just a New York issue. This is happening across the country. And I'm very proud that I think we here in the Senate on the task force and my colleagues today, and hopefully ultimately when it's signed into law, a lot of these changes, I think New York will be taking kind of a leading role in trying to address this heroin epidemic.
Are you hearing some positive signs from the Assembly that they're ready to pass legislation, similar legislation in their house?
Yes. Yeah, and that's a great thing. That's a great thing. This should not be a partisan issue. It certainly can't be a partisan issue. This is an issue that requires action, and that's what we're here to do. You know, on certain things, we are here to act on behalf of our constituents and to try to make positive changes. I think this does this. I certainly encourage the Assembly to make those changes. There are a number of Assembly same-as bills or bills that are very similar. But, you know, this isn't going to be a quick flyover. Let's throw out a quick report. Let's do a bill, a kind of a show bill. These are bills, in our report, that have been borne out by months and months of thoughtful conversations. And I really believe if the Assembly takes those bills, at least the majority of them, they should take all of them, and passes them and sends them to the governor, and the governor signs them into law, we will have done a lot to save lives and a lot for families out there who are struggling with this epidemic. And we would have done a lot to make sure that we have less people who are ultimately addicted to heroin and abusing pain pills.